Hi guys, this is Steven Slack from Soul Center Fitness, and this is the Soul Center Fitness Podcast. Okay guys, this is the first podcast for the Soul Center Fitness Podcast, and today I will have a great physical therapist, Brian Petullo of Hunterdon Sports and Physical Therapy. A thing I love about him is he takes a functional approach, which a lot of therapists are doing nowadays, but he also has a little bit of a performance and athletic background where he deals with a lot of athletes, and he does a couple cool things where he really focuses in and tries to find out the issue, digs down a little deeper. And I love talking to people like that. So we're going to talk about a couple topics, specifically all geared towards the lower back. But first, we'll talk to him about his background. Second, we will touch on lower back issues that are caused not from a muscular standpoint, or things that are caused by alignment issues or disc issues and fractures and things like that. Second, we will talk about lower back issues and true muscular issues and how to address that and at least start that process. And then last, I think we'll get more into the athletic population and quickly touch on how to address some of the athletes specifically and some of the fractures that they get through the contact sports. So without further delay, here we go. All right, guys. So today I've got with me a great physical therapist who will be touching on the lower back considerations in training, and we'll touch on a bunch of topics. But let's get started by just introducing him. I'm going to have you say your name and a little bit of your background.
Sure. So my name is Brian Petullo. I'm a physical therapist over at Hunterdon Sports and Physical Therapy on Route 31. I've been practicing for about 10 years now in different settings. You know, prior I was in the acute care setting at Kessler Institute, and then I switched over from acute care with strokes and amputees and post-surgical patients to the outpatient setting where we see a lot of orthopedic issues of that nature. I've got my doctorate and my bachelor's from Seton Hall University. Really nice, tight-knit program over there. Looking forward to this talk quite a bit.
Awesome, cool. And you were saying before how you really kind of have like a passion more for some of the lower back stuff. Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned some shoulders, which maybe some other time we could touch on.
Sure.
Because there's so much to be had in this lower back.
Oh, yeah.
Which we're going to barely scratch the surface on. But so what do you think, why are some of the reasons why the lower back became one of the biggest things for you?
You know, I think we see it in the physical therapy setting quite a bit. It's one of the most common injuries. You know, I think the stats out there say 90% of us or somewhere in that ballpark are going to experience some type of back or spinal issue. And I think nowadays it's such a problem for even younger and younger patients because of their posture. You know, technology puts us in more slumped, slouched, seated positions. You couple that with like a desk job, and then going home, relaxing on the recliner. You know, we flex to work at our kitchen, we flex to put laundry in, we flex to pick objects up. So the imbalance of forces on our spine, particularly flexion based, is so high nowadays that I think you're going to see more and more people struggling with these back issues.
Yeah. And I know as a trainer specifically, you know, sometimes people will work those extensors a lot, but then as soon as they go into like a static posture, all of a sudden, they're rounded forward. So I like you're saying that posture is a huge thing, which we could probably, you know, go on a tangent on, but for right now, I'll start off with our first question. And basically what I'm going to be asking is, for the everyday person, a lot of times we get a back issue and there's a tightness in the back, and the first thing we're thinking, oh, the muscle's tight, that's the main cause of this, and it's the main way we should treat it by doing soft tissue, whether it's releasing, stretching, etc. Can you kind of enlighten us on, is it always going to be the lower back tightness? Is it always going to be the muscle and the muscle that we should fix first in all these lower back injuries?
I think it's a perfect question that Steve asks. I think the misconception is people come in, they always think the muscle's the culprit because it's where they feel their pain. But the spine is tricky in the sense that it can really send referred pains to different locations. It can really send a lot of symptoms elsewhere, you know, so that spasm, that type of guarding and that pain response is a product of what's going on usually deeper in the spine, in those tissues. So typically, should we elaborate on some of the areas that can cause?
Yeah. Let's talk about maybe some of the other issues. Like what's a specific example?
I think one of the most common examples you'll see is in terms of the disc. So to elaborate a little bit, like in between each vertebrae, each bony segment, you have a jelly donut like intervertebral disc. And when that disc tends to bulge, it goes back and usually to one side because our spinal cord's protected by ligaments. So when you have this bulging disc that could be pressing a little bit on a nerve root, it's going to send messages into the muscle and the connective tissue that nerve innervates. So you're going to get a lot of tightness, you can get burning, you can get achy, you can get stiffness, throbbing. So people are under the impression that they're having an issue wherever the pain is, versus in that central location of the spine that is really the mechanical problem. And then you couple that in with acute inflammation, like increased blood flow, which causes more pressure on the nerve. And when you have a really hypersensitive nerve, you have a really interesting array of symptoms people can get, from tingling to numbness to burning to all those crazy things, as well as the muscle response.
That's interesting. So, for instance, like let's say I have a client and all of a sudden they have this, you know, spasming of the back on one side. So what happens if they do approach it as a muscle tightness issue primarily, and it's what you just talked about? It's that really that disc pressing against the nerves and stuff.
Great question. I think usually what you're going to see is, you know, it's not a bad thing to address the soft tissue, myofascial release, acupuncture, cupping or negative pressure, all that good stuff out there, massage. But it's kind of, it may make a person feel better temporarily, but I always tell people, you know, it's one of those things that'll keep showing back up depending what stresses they're enduring during the day, how they're sitting, what they're doing. So people get very frustrated because they'll feel better, but it'll always come back, you know. So if they're not addressing posture or the right corrective exercise, you know, that is going to keep reappearing because of a mechanical versus a soft tissue problem.
Yeah. So it becomes obviously alignment is crucial in that instance. Kind of just touching on like sometimes how I'll approach it is, a lot of times I kind of assume alignment first as a trainer because I don't have access to X-rays. I don't have, you know, I don't have the kind of elevated knowledge that a normal therapist would. So I'll go in and I'll maybe touch on a couple McKenzie type things first and see, okay, are they going to respond and react to that? And then obviously if they're not reacting to that, then I might be like, okay, maybe we are talking about something muscular, there's something else going on, or maybe I need to refer out to actually get some more data on this person.
Yeah, I think Steve brings up a great point in the sense that, you know, you can't go wrong with alignment, discussing improved posture, improved lifting mechanics. And to his point, you don't really, I think another misconception is people think you need X-rays or MRIs to have any idea of what's going on, when in actuality, the best method is a good history. Discuss with a person, a client, a patient, what provokes their pain, what makes it better. For example, like, you know, in a disc issue, most people say sitting can really up my pain. It's tough to get out of that seated position. Whereas when they're walking, they feel an improved type of quality in terms of their pain when they're standing, when they're walking, when they're extended. So I think Steve's right. The best way is to move the person, see how they respond to flexion or versus extension, and ask them the right array of questions, and you'll get a lot more out of that than even X-rays or MRIs, because X-rays and MRIs are going to give you this broad spectrum, tons of stuff going on, narrowing, disc issues, arthritic change at many, many levels. And really the best way to know which is the problem level is where their pain is, whether it's the back of their leg, down into the calf and ankle and foot, in the front of their leg. That's going to give you a lot more idea in what you would expect to see on the imaging anyway.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And you brought up a real good point about that health history, where it becomes crucial. And maybe even for, I know for myself, sometimes we'll give the health or a health history sheet. They won't answer everything on it. And then so I have to kind of refocus and start to talk to them again and kind of just through my everyday sessions, kind of touching on, okay, what in this history have we missed possibly?
Definitely.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about, you talked about the disc issue. What about another structural thing like, it's not quite the lower back, it's more the hip, but I know it can affect the lower back or be affected by the lower back, and that's the pelvic floor, or more so specifically the anterior nominate, posterior nominate type stuff, where the hips, one hip is shifting forward, the other maybe shifting back, or kind of touch on how that can affect your lower back pain and what that might feel like.
You know, like Steve brings up that good point of the pelvis, or you could call it hip dysfunctions or positional issues. You know, so a lot of it, I mean, you could think of it as is it the chicken or the egg? Like a lot of the times when somebody has had back pain or has back issues, muscles of our hip and pelvis can be very inhibited or shut down, or they can be really, you can develop muscle imbalances where they're tight in certain ways, certain muscle groups versus others. And that can throw one side of your pelvis off in terms of positioning, like Steve is talking about, anterior, posterior. You could have an upshift or a downshift, or even the pubic bone could be a little misaligned. So you'll have all these different pelvic issues that can develop, whether it's posture and how they position themselves or stand, or how they, if they've had a trauma and fell on their backside or in a certain awkward way. You know, we get a lot of horseback riders in this area, Hunterdon County. So you can kind of screen out the two areas. Like you can screen someone's low back, have them do some repeated movements, see if that provokes their pain. And if you're not getting a particular mechanical response from back movements, then you could kind of move your way down into the pelvis and do series of tests to see if certain bony landmarks are a little asymmetrical. Like if for instance, you know, the front of their hip, there's a bony point called the anterior superior iliac spine. You can palpate, you can see if the alignment's off, and then you can run some tests to see if some of these bony landmarks are moving less or more than the opposite side. So you're going to kind of go through a movement screen to kind of line up your ducks and get a better idea of what really is going on with that person.
Yeah, I this is going to take me on possible other rabbit hole, but I'm going to take the risk. sometimes, like you said, you can do some of those tests, and as therapists, you're very educated in knowing what to look for in these tests during these movements. A lot of times, as a trainer, we don't have that knowledge, and it's kind of, I feel like if there was a better system, if we could have like a system where we could, you know, if, you know, the trainer sees, oh, they're not moving well, there's a little lower back pain, or there's maybe no pain, but we see that one side's not moving well, and we know enough to just see that. Wouldn't it be cool if we had an opportunity to kind of like send the therapist and work on performance?
Sure.
Rather than recovery of injury, sure, in that sense of kind of preventing these possible injuries from happening. Do you see that happening in your clinic a lot, or is it something?
Yeah, I mean, I think Steve brings up that good point, and I think even to most therapists, if you ask them one of the most difficult areas of treatment, they would probably say these pelvic asymmetries, you know, because a lot of what you see in folks can be anatomical. It can be something you may not be able to fix, yeah, versus some things that you can fix with muscle energy techniques or soft tissue techniques and some corrective exercise. But I think you will come across most patients when you look at their, you know, lower extremity or almost anywhere in the body, they're going to have these asymmetries. And if they are directly related to their pain or to their problem, is something that is really hard to really start weeding through. So I think Steve's right. You'll see it on most people. But to find out if it's related at all to their problem is the tough part.
Yeah. I know for performance specifically, when I start training clients for higher end or higher level performance, is when, like you said, there's going to be some asymmetries here and there. That's just kind of part of the person. But I feel like a good kind of way to start moving us towards is, you know, therapists and trainers working together and educating, like, hey, you know, this person, it's not that big of a deal, but they have an upslip here. We're going to address it. We're going to get it out. But it's always going to be the kind of that tendency. But these are some precautions and training that you should look for. I know for myself, let's use an example of an anterior nominate or that pelvis is shifted forward.
Yep.
I know for a step up on that side, because they're, a lot of times they're going to be hitting bone on bone quicker. I can't go as high with them and respecting their anatomy in that sense. At least if the issue is not getting addressed through physical therapy or something.
Sure.
But I wanted to also kind of shift gears and go towards. So we touched on things that issues that are not related to muscle, soft tissue issues as the main cause.
Sure.
What about things that are the soft tissue as a main cause?
Definitely.
And can we make that separation, or is it? Yeah.
So you know, Steve brings up a good point in terms of, you know, muscle in general has such good circulation, such good blood flow. And when it comes to good oxygen-rich blood flow, these tissues of our body are known to be the ones that heal the best, heal the quickest, you know, versus things that don't get great blood flow, like cartilage and whatnot. So to Steve's point, I think true muscle strains, they can tend not to linger as long. You know, they will heal usually quicker with rest and ice and all that good stuff. The ones that tend to linger when it comes to muscular strains tend to turn into, they change from an itis, as people would describe things like tendonitis or issues of that nature, to more of a tendinopathy, where things scar and they heal poorly in our body. So our body is great at healing in general, but sometimes scar tissue builds up and it's kind of like a haphazard arrangement of fibers or collagen, like a haystack, and it continues to give a achy kind of discomfort with movement. And the thing about true muscle strains and injuries, like of the back, is you need to progressively load those tissues to get correct healing. You have to remodel them over the course of, you know, some would say like 6 to 8 or even 12 weeks. So it's one of those things you have to express to people that this little bit of discomfort, low-level discomfort, will be there with movement for quite a while until the area is fully remodeled through the stimuli that you're going to give it in the gym or with your professional like Steve or myself. And the education is key, because you want to avoid those higher velocities, higher impacts, the postural stresses that can continue to inflame the area. But muscle overall, I think, is a great injury to have, because it's going to have the opportunity to heal a lot better, quicker than a lot of these other issues.
That's very interesting. So you just touched on a point that with some of these, with these muscle things and these tendon things, that technically, yes, you're going to do that rest and stuff, but a crucial part of that is the re-education of that muscle. And that, so you're not resting until all the pain is gone away. You are going to work through it a little bit. And then it, I guess it becomes crucial. It becomes like the art form of training, because now movement efficiency is your ultimate key. Yeah. So when you see somebody with improper form trying to re-educate their muscles, it's only going to create maybe more scarring? Or
to Steve's point, it's amazing that discussion and the research out there for loading and stimulating. It used to be, is it the concentric or eccentric contraction that gives a faster generates faster healing in these tissues? Really, I think the bottom line has come to just stimulate the tissue, whether it's through gentle stretching, progressive resisted stuff, body weight stuff, the gentle pulling and tugging and stretching on fascia and connective tissue is going to cause a deeper cellular response than I think we even fully understand. And I think that is the key, is kind of that progressive guided approach to an injury like this.
Yeah. I think this kind of topic right here touches exactly on what I had a blog out recently, and the article was on resiliency. Mm-hmm. And basically the whole concept was that we assume exercise, obviously our goals are to get in shape and to get, you know, look better or whatever, perform better. And we assume that exercise in and of itself will heal, will make us more resilient, injury prevented and all this stuff. But it's intentional, appropriately loaded exercises and efficiency of movement with your exercises will do that. And so kind of educating people and educating ourselves on what is efficient movement is crucial if we're going to be doing that. Or that's where a therapist and possibly a good trainer kind of comes into play.
Yeah, I think Steve's right from the sense that a lot of people, like Steve's saying, it's a guided approach. You know, you want to start, you know, it's good to have an outside eye look at you and do some testing and try to figure out where your imbalances or problems lie. Like, you know, in the example of the back, you know, if someone has really tight hamstrings, it's going to pull on the part attachment point of the pelvis that forces us into a little more of a seated slump. Mm-hmm. So if your trainer or your therapist doesn't kind of address that lengthening of that hamstring, it's going to really predispose you to some of these low back, these disc issues, just because you naturally won't be able to keep that good arch or lordosis of your low back. So in the terms of, like Steve is saying, having that outside eye running you through some corrective type things, you know, exercise in general is fantastic, and it's better to be mobile and be active than not. But I think with your exercise regimen, you can get yourself into trouble in certain ways with these postural and muscle imbalances that we have, you know. So I think you have to address it.
Yeah, that's a great point. I want to touch, I'm running out of time quickly, but I want to touch on an issue that you wanted to really talk about, the fractures and stuff. Sure. In the back, for especially for our athletes. Can you quickly touch on that and just kind of end it off there?
Absolutely. I think, you know, we see, and I bet Steve has seen young athletes in the gym with back pain, and it can definitely be muscular. It can be the disc issues that we talked about. But to Steve's point, if it's really a painful area that lingers, you know, it's important to get the X-ray and the MRI imaging for our younger athletes, because sometimes we'll see stress fractures of the vertebrae that can, if they're bilateral on both sides of the vertebrae, can allow the vertebrae to slip forward, what they would call anteriorly. It's called spondylolisthesis. And it's not, you know, essentially the most common thing you'll see, but it is something that's serious enough where if they have pain standing, walking, jumping, when their spine is extended, that it can progressively get worse for them and lead to some nerve compression and irritation. And if it's not addressed sooner and allowed to heal properly and they're not pulled out of the impact and jumping sports that they're in, it can be a bigger problem. And they are in that adolescence, that younger age, they should be getting the imaging, versus like we talked about, some of the imaging for the middle-aged or, you know, older patient, that they don't have to rush to get the imaging. But the younger kids, the younger athletes should in these cases. And also, to Steve's point, you know, another thing you see is some stenotic change, particularly in older patients. But again, that's another topic that's an anatomical thing and needs its own treatment and its own right, its own discussion. So it's another topic we can always get into.
With the stenosis thing, I know sometimes when I'll do McKenzie stuff, but they have some of that, like, I guess it's called radiculopathy, right? When they're getting that nerve discomfort, and McKenzie stuff is not touching it at all. I'm thinking, uh-oh, maybe we have a little stenosis action.
And when you have that narrowing, whether it be the lateral foramen or where the nerve roots come off the spinal cord, or whether it's more central around the spinal cord, like Steve says, you'll get the radiculopathy, you'll get the leg symptoms at time, whether it's one leg or both legs. And, you know, being more anatomical, if it's true stenosis, you know, they're going to prefer being flexed, like leaning over, sitting is going to relieve their leg symptoms, versus our disc issues where extending and getting upright typically relieves their leg symptoms.
Interesting. Okay. So it's almost like an inverse in a sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
You'll see that big differentiation between the stenotic patients and the disc patients. And the stenotic patients, you know, you really have to address that neutral base strengthening and correct some of the lifting mechanics and seated positioning. And some of them are more tolerant to neutral and some extension, versus others really want to be flexed and really won't tolerate those
positions.
Very
interesting. Thank you so much. I've run out of time. It was a pleasure. And hopefully we're going to have to do this again.
Yeah,
definitely.
Great talk. I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. All right.
Well, this concludes our first episode. It was a lot of fun. I love talking with Brian, and I'm probably going to try to bring him on again in the next couple of episodes. But for now, thank you so much for staying with us, for listening to this, and I hope it was educational, but useful also in your everyday life. Talk to you soon. Over and out.